It's Philosophy Talk.
The average cost of college is, what, $20,000 a year? Now, according to these estimates that I got off the web, you can pass those around, someone with no education beyond high school can expect to make about $20,000 a year in the current job market. Now, that being said, over the next 4 years, you could either spend $80,000 or I could make $80,000.
What are you going to do with your fancy college degree in comparative literature or philosophy?
Society has rules. And the first rule is, you go to college. You want to have a happy and successful life? You go to college. If you want to be somebody, you go to college. If you want to fit in, you go to college.
Is college really for everybody?
Some sort of education beyond high school is really crucial to create great opportunities and to live a really fulfilling life.
Our guest is former president of Stanford University, John Hennessy.
The most important thing is not starting college, it's completing college.
The value of a college education.
Coming up on Philosophy Talk. This is Philosophy Talk, the program that questions everything.
Except your intelligence. I'm John Perry.
And I'm Ken Taylor. We're coming to you from De Anza High School in Richmond, California. We're in front of a live audience, and a lively audience, of AP students and their teachers.
Our thinking originates at Philosopher's Corner on the Stanford campus. That's where Ken teaches philosophy, and I taught for philosophy there for 40 years.
40 wonderful years, John. And welcome, everyone, to Philosophy Talk. Today, we're thinking about the value of a college education.
Well, you know, Ken, these days, times can be tight, money scarce. When people think of the value of college, they tend to think in terms of dollars and cents. How much is it going to cost me? How much is it going to cost my parents? How much will I have to take out in student loans to pay for it? Will my future earnings make college worth the cost? Stuff like that.
Well, John, that's certainly one way to measure the value of a college education. That's the economic measure of its value. And that's an important way. But, you know, it's really not. I don't think it's the best way. That's because college is about so much more. It's about so much more than the size of your future paycheck. I'm with the author W.E.B. Du Bois, one of the great American thinkers about education. He said, the true college curriculum is the riddle of existence. And its goal, he said, is not to earn meat, that is money, but to know the end and aim of that life which meat nourishes. What do you think about that, John?
Oh, I think it's profound, Ken. And spoken like a true philosophy major,
hey.
At least one of them who's managed to get a job and eke out a living.
Well, except I got a dirty little secret for you. I don't think I've ever told you this. My major in college, it wasn't actually philosophy.
You didn't tell me that when I hired you.
No, that's true. I started out as an electrical engineer. I dabbled in psychology for a while, and then I tried my hand at mathematics until I met my match in topology. And finally, I ended up majoring in this kind of cool, great books program.
So what's the point about this life story?
It's like that you should go with the major you love. Find your passion. Let the future take care of itself. Your undergraduate major anyway, may have little direct bearing on what you actually end up doing for a living and with the rest of your life.
Well, an important fact is that to be employable, you don't have to devote your whole major to it. Just a series of courses in computer science or accounting or something that companies need is going to do it. But try telling that to nervous parents who worry that their kid's fancy degree in philosophy or comp lit. They think that's a very expensive ticket to poverty, unemployment, and coming back after graduation to live in the basement.
Well, you know, parents can be a problem. But, you know, there comes a time when you have to listen to your own voice. And you block out the voice of your parents. There comes a time when you have to do that. College is a good time to do that.
You know what I tell advise students to tell their parents if they want to major in philosophy?
No, what's that? What do you tell them?
I tell them to lie.
Oh, come on, John. Stop joking.
No, I'm dead serious. I say, look, you want to be a philosophy major. Somebody comes in office hours, says, I want to be a philosophy major, but I'm worried about my parents' whole thing. I say, call them up. Say, Mom and Dad, I've decided to major in dance. Then wait a week or two and call them up and say, no, I've reconsidered, I'm going to major in philosophy. They won't give you any grief.
But look, John, there's no reason to lie. I mean, speaking of unemployment, you were talking about an express ticket to unemployment. Philosophy majors actually have one of the lowest postgraduate unemployment rates, and lower than certain STEM majors that are all the rage these days, like math, biology, or physics, or even chemical engineering right out of college. Lower than more vocational or applied majors like graphic design, industrial engineering, or even architecture. So there's no reason to lie.
Well, I mean, philosophy graduates make very good baristas, so they get jobs.
Oh, no. It's any kind of work.
No, in any kind of work, any kind of corporation, it needs people that know how to think, know how to chair meetings, know how to put the silly stuff aside and focus on what's right, need to write clearly. So philosophy majors do very, very well. I would never say that a degree in philosophy, which I've spent my whole life in, is going to ruin a student for life.
And it's not just that philosophy won't ruin you for life. The liberal arts generally, what they do is prepare you for life. They enhance the powers of your mind. They expand your horizons. They deepen your sympathies. That's why Du Bois, who thought actually the liberal arts was the key to culture and civilization, that's why he loved them so much.
Ken, in spite of my old age and cynicism, I really love your passion and idealism, and you can even share a little bit of it sometimes. But I don't think most people see college quite that way these days.
No, you're unfortunately right about that. Way too many people see college, especially elite colleges like Stanford, where you and I teach, or Harvard or Yale, as the brass ring. Grab that brass ring at the end of some frantic rat race.
Well, that's why parents and students often allow their college choices to be influenced, unduly influenced, by these pointless college ratings put out by the likes of U.S. News and World Report.
You're right. They are utterly pointless. It's also why parents sometimes spend tens of thousands of dollars, sometimes even $100,000, on a private college counselor.
Well, now just speaking for myself, not for Stanford or for you or anybody else, I would love to put a complete stop to the whole multi-billion dollar private counselor industry.
Well, good luck with that, man. That genie is not going back into the bottle anytime soon.
That's why we sent our roving philosophical reporter, Shuka Kalantari, to take a close-up look at how that industry works for good or ill. She files this report.
High school is stressful.
No time! There's never any time! I don't have time to study! I'll never get into Stanford!
A recent NYU study shows today's high school students have so much chronic stress, it actually messes with their ability to do well in class. It increases their fear and anxiety over not getting into top-notch colleges. And that leads us to the billion-dollar college consulting industry.
In a lot of ways, the private consulting industry is feeding on the fears of many families and kids.
That's Richard Shaw. He's the Dean of Undergraduate Admissions and Financial Aid at Stanford University. Shaw says some private college admissions consultants are mercenaries, charging as much as $40,000 per student. College consultants are cashing in on this growing desire for students to go to a small pool of fancy colleges. But he says high school students shouldn't focus on admissions rates. Instead, they should explore activities in schools that make them happy.
We need to come back to giving young people their adolescence back.
Shaw doesn't think all college admissions consultants are bad. Many are certified to follow national standards. No false promises of getting into schools, and no writing a student's college essay for them.
The biggest favor you can do yourself in this is to be open-minded and flexible in the options that you're considering.
Nicole Hoseman is a college admissions consultant in Berkeley, California. She asks her students not to focus only on top-name universities.
You will discover a whole wealth of colleges out there that you didn't know existed that could be fantastic places for you.
Zipporah Zingel is a freshman in college. In her junior year of high school, Nicole Hoseman was her private college consultant. Zipporah says the counseling was worth it.
We came to a realization, or at least I did, I'm sure she already had, that there's no reason to force yourself into something that you won't enjoy, because if you don't enjoy it, you won't really find passion or happiness in what you're doing.
Zipporah ended up going to UC Berkeley, but not because it's a popular school. She actually enjoys it there.
It's not like the superficial appearances of the college.
Nicole Hoseman, Zipporah's college admin consultant,
says even though her job is to get people right into a four-year college, she went to a community college, and she's doing great.
There's, I think, this notion when you're a teenager that this choice you make now will affect everything about your future trajectory. And in a way, it does. But as any adult will tell you, in reality, life goes in so many unexpected directions, and there's always a different door that opens. And it's important, but it's not the be-all, end-all of where you're going to end up in life and how happy you're going to be.
So the takeaway from all this? Yes, students should work hard, but they shouldn't stress out too much. Families can hire a college admissions consultant, or not. But if they do, they don't need to drop $40,000 on it. For Philosophy Talk, I'm Shuka Kalantari.
Thanks, Shuka, for that very helpful and informative piece. I'm John Perry. I'm here along with my fellow philosopher from Stanford, Ken Taylor. We're coming to you from De Anza High School in Richmond, California. Except, is it really in Richmond? What are your... Yeah, okay.
Our guest today recently stepped down as the 10th president of Stanford University, and it was a peaceful transition. He wasn't forced out, and there wasn't any protest. He's also a leading computer scientist who's been called, get this, the godfather of Silicon Valley, and we people at Stanford love to kiss his ring, like in the Godfather movie. Please welcome to the Philosophy Talk stage, John Hennessy.
John?
Hello, John.
Ken? Nice to have you, boss.
Good to see you.
John, you've had a long and distinguished career in university education, but you also had a brief, but I would guess quite lucrative, stint in Silicon Valley as one of the founders of an early startup.
A really important early startup.
Yeah. What made you decide to pursue a career in the academy, return to Stanford, rather than just kind of make a lot of money or retire to Portola Valley or something like that? I don't think it was a high salary that presidents at Stanford got.
No, John. I came back because I really loved working with students and teaching in the classroom, and that's what I really missed, and I decided I wanted to spend my life working with young people, and that's why I came back.
Well, there's a lot of pressure on kids to go to college these days. Although only something like a third of Americans hold a four-year degree. So, I mean, what's the truth? Should everybody be going to college or not?
Well, I think in this environment, John, some sort of education beyond high school is really crucial to create great opportunities for and to live a really fulfilling life. But it can be, for some students, it's community college. For some students, it's a four-year degree program. The most important thing is not starting college. It's completing college. Remember that somewhere between a third and a half of the students that start in college don't finish their degree. That's a real loss. So I think the important thing is find a place you're really excited. Find something you want to do. I'm with Ken. Go with the heart. Find something you're really passionate about and pursue it and get it done. And it can be a two-year degree or a four-year degree.
So the American college, we'll talk a lot about the American college landscape, but it does offer students all kinds of possibilities.
Great diversity.
But people are so focused. I mean, there are the ratings, the college counseling industry. They're so focused on really just a few colleges. I mean, why is that? And what's up with that? And how do we change that?
I think the whole rating system, particularly things like U.S. News and World Report, where we rank colleges, and U.S. News and World Report tells you how you should rank various colleges. They put weightings on saying what's important for you. Well, how do they know what's important for you? A question I often ask parents is, tell me about the schools that your son or daughter are applying to. And they know the U.S. News and World Report rankings. I ask them, tell me about what are the odds that your son or daughter is going to graduate from that school? That's a much more important question. They don't know the answer to that question. So if you're a young person thinking about college, go look at the data. It's all online. Common data set. Every single school is required to put online. And there are two things they'll tell you online. They'll tell you what percentage of students graduate from the school. They'll tell you by background of the students. And the other thing they'll tell you is how much financial aid you'll probably get. So you'll know early on whether or not you can afford to go there.
I think the thing that we have to break through, and I don't quite know how we break through this thing that John and I said in the beginning, I think people have come to think of, especially elite colleges and the top ranked and all that, as the brass ring. There's a frantic rat race for the brass ring. We live in a highly competitive society. Is Stanford the brass ring that you should strive for at the end of the rat race?
You know, my view is I didn't go to a Stanford. I went to a small, medium-sized East Coast school, Villanova. You know, I think, remember, the thing to remember about an undergraduate degree is it's a foundation. It's the beginning. It's not the end of your education. It's the start of your education. It's on what you'll build the rest of your education.
This is Philosophy Talk, coming to you from De Anza High School in Richmond, California. Our guest is former Stanford president John Hennessy, and we're discussing the value of a college education.
In our next segment, we're going to think about the challenges of navigating the college landscape once you get there with all those choices and freedom that you'll have. Should you play it safe and choose a major that will inevitably lead to a good job right out of college, even if it's kind of boring and your heart isn't in it? Or should you throw caution to the winds, pursue your deepest passion, write poetry, let the chips fall where they may?
Purpose, passion, and pragmatism in your college choices, along with questions from our college-bound and, I hope, lively audience when Philosophy Talk continues.
Won't you leave them alone? Won't you leave them alone?
Thanks to our musical guest, the Tiffany Austin Trio. This is Philosophy Talk, and I'm John Perry.
And I'm Ken Taylor. Our guest is former president of Stanford, John Hennessy. And we're thinking about the value of a college education.
So, you know, now you're supposed to imagine. You've taken all the right courses in high school. You joined the right clubs. You wrote an amazing personal essay.
On your own.
On your own. Now you're the student at the college of your choice, or your second choice, or your third choice. But you're there. You're on campus. What are you going to do now? You can join the discussion, as Ken said, and tell us what you're going to do.
So, John, most high school students, I'm sure these students, they don't quite have a sense at all what awaits them when they get into an amazing college campus and the areas of studies they've never even heard of. And then a lot more freedom to choose than in high school. A lot more freedom. And now freedom can be really hard to navigate. I warn you, freedom can be hard to navigate. You're a wise guy. You've been at this for a long time. You got any advice for these students about how to embark on their journey?
Yeah, I think it is about finding your passion. I mean, for two reasons. One is you want to really benefit. You want to enjoy your time in college. The other is whatever you begin with is likely to lead to some kind of career direction. It may be by going to graduate school or something else. The last thing you want to do is spend the next 50 years of your life pursuing a career you don't really love. So finding something that really excites you and energizes you is key. And that's really what freshman year is about. It's about dabbling a bit, trying that course in philosophy, in psychology, in electrical engineering, trying something different, stretching your wings a little bit to see what really works and excites you.
But one thing you have to remember is one of the great things about American higher education, and in general, America generally, is you get a lot of opportunities to start over. Some countries, they have to know what you're majoring in before you go to college. And your major may be restricted by the kind of high school you got into based on eighth grade tests. Not like that in America. I barely graduated from a really mediocre high school in Nebraska. I went to college to play football. Tried to find a college small enough I could make the team.
Is there such a college?
No, it turned out there wasn't.
I want to step back into a little philosophy. I want to think about W.E.B. Du Bois. I don't know if you agree with this or not. He said, the true curriculum of the college is the riddle of existence. Who am I? What am I about? What is my life for? What should I be doing with this life? Who will I live this life as? Now, that is kind of connected to career and all that, but it's much broader than career. It's about fashioning a self.
Right.
Do you agree with that?
I think it's certainly true that that's part of what's going on, Ken. But I think at the same time, you have to view your college education as a big investment. It's an investment of 4 years of your life. It's also a big investment typically for your parents. So I don't think you can put the career concerns on the side and completely ignore them. I think you have to mold both into get a really great college.
See, but I don't think there's a conflict, though.
No,
I mean, because I think what something you said is really important. Imagine two people. One's wants to be an artist and has great talent as an artist, but it's really hard to get recognition as an artist. It's a hard life. Another is equally talented, but can't stomach the idea of not that recognition, so chooses a career or profession or major that he or she doesn't love, but is lucrative and all that sort. They both get to the end of their lives. One has tried with all of his or her heart to do art and has had some success, and one has given that up early on. Which has lived a better life?
I think the artist has lived the better life. I think there's no doubt about it. You know, I started as an electrical engineering undergraduate major, but I switched to computer science for my graduate study. Believe it or not, when I went to school, there were no computer science undergraduate majors in the entire United States.
Yep.
So I switched because I really found I liked electrical engineering. I loved computer science. And so it was finding that real passion, and that's what really excited me.
Let me put in a few details. At Stanford, which is on a quarter system, it takes 180 quarter units to graduate. Less than 30 of those units will be spent making sure that you've got Stanford's requirements that they have of everybody fulfilled. As AP students, it'll be even less because you will have done some of them here. If you major not in engineering but outside of engineering, it's usually about 50 units. So that means you're going to have 50 at least units to play with. And what are you going to do? Well, the one thing I would insist that you do is realize that you have to find out who you are. Who are you now? Well, with all due respect, you're largely the result of where you grew up, your parents, your grandparents, what you see on TV. Think of your head as just a bunch of M&Ms that have been poured into you since birth. They may be really good M&Ms, but when you get to college, you want to go through them and say, I actually don't like peanut butter and pineapple M&Ms. You have to find out what you value, what you think, what you believe.
Chris, that's not
so that's my preaching for the day.
That's not an easy thing to do, finding out who you are, what you value. That's a real challenge. Back to Du Bois, who is one of my favorite authors on this, in the Souls of Black Folks, one of the opening lines is that there's always this unasked question when he encounters any white person. He's talking about blacks in the South. And the unasked question is, how does it feel to be a problem, right? And and he's talking about what he calls the problem of the color line and all that sort of stuff. But he's also talking about a self. The self is a problem. That is, who am I? What am I to be? What am I to do? And college is about helping you answer that question. But there's no easy formula.
There's no easy formula. And I think it's partly experiential, right? It's partly comes from living away from home, living with students who come from a wide variety of different backgrounds, who are studying different things and have different passions. That's part of the experiential growth that helps you figure out who you are.
Yeah, so college can be an amazing place for self-exploration and self-configuration and self-development. We're in front of a live audience at De Anza High School talking about the value of a college education with former Stanford president John Hennessy, and we've got questions from that audience. Welcome to Philosophy Talk, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Karina Asensio. I'm a junior here at De Anza High School. And my question is, I heard you guys talking about a bad reputation not too long ago. Does a bad reputation of a college affect how many applicants apply? And if so, how does that happen?
When you say a bad reputation, what do you mean by a bad reputation?
Just like some rumors. So like when I visited the college, a lot of people were kind of like, in a way, stuck up. And, like, I'm not a stuck-up person. So, like, that would affect me applying there. So, like, does that, like, affect, like, and if so, how does that affect it?
John, you got any?
Yeah, I think students, you'll find at different schools, there's a wide variety of degree and how engaged, how happy students are. And I agree with what Dean Shaw said earlier. Students who are happy are better learners. They're more engaged. So I think you have to find a place where you feel comfortable. And the way to do that is to go visit the college, get on a tour, talk to the students, ask lots of questions about what it's like to be there. And that'll give you some real insight. I remember when we took my son to visit a college in Southern California, and he was a vegan at the time. And so he asked, do they have vegetarian food here in the cafeteria? And they said, oh, yes, we have chicken. So we decided decided early on that was not the college for him.
That was not well-run food services. I want to add something to that. Look, one of the things you get out of college, you get really cool professors who are amazing thinkers and often amazing teachers and sometimes both, you know, in the same. And that's an amazing thing. But you also get the other students. You know, that they're another resource. You're one among a whole group of students. And I think you're going to learn as much from them as you are from your professors. So it's a...
So I have a couple questions for President Hennessy here. Given the views we tend to agree on, wouldn't some of the following policies make sense for Stanford? Quit having this big rigmarole admissions process. Set a bottom level in terms of grades and GRE scores and choose at random.
And have a lottery. That would go over well with parents, I suspect. And
well,
with students
I don't know.
Who work hard.
I've been advocating at Stanford for 40 years, and no one has ever agreed with me, but I thought you might.
Well, I can understand the point you're making, John. I think it's a legitimate point to discuss. I think the problem is young people work so hard to get into the college they really want to go to. You're putting a random factor on top of that, and
yeah,
I think
but let's
that's
not make it random. Why can't Stanford invest in? And maybe you've done this. I don't know. Have we ever looked at how people were ranked in terms of admission?
Yes.
The ones that got in
yes.
and the ones that didn't, and
yes.
retrospectively how well they did at
yes,
Stanford. Is
we
there
do.
A correlation?
There is a correlation. There is a correlation because particularly because we do holistic admissions, mm-hmm. right? We read the entire folder. We try to get a picture of what the individual is like a person. And one of the things we look for is, are they excited about learning? Are they going to come to the school and really take advantage of that opportunity?
Yeah, but I get your point. But there is something underneath, John. I mean, college has turned, the admissions thing has turned into such a rat race. And we're, unfortunately, part of the problem because we're so selective and we're so excellent. I mean, Stanford's a mind-blowing place. I will not deny you that. But that makes it look like the value, the incremental value of getting into Stanford as opposed to someplace else, you know, makes it worth racing toward.
I think the great advantage of the American system is that there are lots of really good colleges. The right thing is to find the right college for you as an individual.
So let's take some questions. Welcome to Philosophy Talk, Sarah.
Hi, my name is Lucas Henson. I'm a junior here at De Anza, Richmond El Sobrante. My question is, would you say that college is a place mainly reserved for people who have already found their passion and attempt to pursue it? Or is it truly a place where people with undecided majors can go and explore what they like?
I'd say most people are undecided. You know, what we say at Stanford is the number one major at the end of freshman year is I don't know, and the number two choice of major is I changed my mind. I think there's lots of change that goes on there, and I think that's the right approach, and a good college will help you do that.
That's because we kind of have a lot. I mean, that's because of the kind of school we are. There is an unfortunate fact that some schools, some of the state schools especially, like Cal State system here in California, makes you apply to a major. You can apply undeclared, but it's kind of harder to get in.
And you can change.
You can change. But, yes, college is a place for freedom. Don't think of yourself as locked into even what you think is your favorite major, because there are going to be so many things that you haven't experienced that you're going to be exposed to. Welcome to Philosophy Talk. I'm just going to go back and forth and back and forth.
My name is Rasan Hernandez. I am a junior. And my question was, what do colleges generally look for in students? Like, do they look for people with passions, or do they look for people with, I guess, a higher education than others? What do they usually look for?
Well, I think they look for a combination. I think most good schools try to look at the student's record in high school. Did they challenge themselves? Did they take courses that were rigorous? Did they try to take AP? Did they push themselves? Did they find some area they were really good at, whether it was math or science or English? So they tend to look at that. Many people think that test scores are the end-all and be-all, SATs and things. They're not the end-all and be-all. They're the one other piece of evidence that gets added to the rest of it. High school track record, though, the most important thing. Show us that you can really work hard and that you're driven.
Yeah, shows you work hard and that you can driven. But we, some colleges, not Stanford, are more forgiving of trying and failing.
Yeah, sure.
Right? I mean, some college and AP courses are important, but I don't think we, I know students who have taken 13 AP courses. I don't think we care if you take AP courses. No disadvantage to your AP teachers who are here. We applaud you and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, we actually teach this stuff pretty well ourselves.
Yeah,
you know?
Let me put one little caveat on that, Ken. It's hard to do science and engineering now in 4 years if you don't have some exposure to calculus and physics these days. It's just the way the world is.
Right. So. And even if you're not doing science and engineering, those AP courses will give you a more flexibility when you get to college. And in terms of we do it as well, we sure do it as well, but we don't do it as cheaply.
Well, that's
true. I think it's pretty silly to, with all due respect, pay our rates for learning Spanish or learning French or learning some lower mathematics, because it's the same at De Anza College or Hayward Junior College, and it's a heck of a lot cheaper.
Yeah, but I still think, I know students who have go through high school taking 13, 14 AP courses, pressing. That doesn't have to happen.
Right.
Even
I agree
consistent
with
John.
I agree
with
John.
Welcome to Philosophy Talk.
Hello, good morning. I'm Kira Storgan. I'm a junior here at De Anza. And my question is, how did each of you find yourself and passion, and what is one hardship that you all faced, and how did you guys handle them?
I faced a hardship, two hardships in college. First of all, I discovered the reason I wanted to be an engineer is because I liked math, and I didn't want to be an engineer. I wanted to do math, so I started taking all the honors courses instead of the ones for engineers. And then in analysis, I got the first C in a math course in my entire life. And it was like, whoa. And I thought, I wanted to go to graduate school in math at the time. That was deeply depressing.
Yeah.
The first C I got in a math course was not a disappointment. It was,
wow! You know, I found my passion in computing late nights in the computer center. I mean, I just loved it. I could stay up late and do it. I had a real challenge when I was in high school. My mother passed away of cancer in my freshman year in college, and it threw me for a loop. I was taking an extra course load, and, you know, basically it wiped out that semester, and I had to kind of reboot myself and get myself started again.
By way of answer, I'll finish my story. So after my freshman year playing college football, and I don't have to worry about concussions, to worry about splinters from the bench, but not concussions. The coach came out and put his arm around me and said, Perry, you're small, but you're slow. Have you ever thought about the humanities? Well, a year later, I'd found my passion, which was philosophy. It was actually the humanities, but I can't deal with poetry and I can't deal with facts, so it had to be philosophy. And I found my other passion, which was now my wife of 55 years. So I had some considerable hurdles by the time I was a senior, because I had a wife and a kid, and had to figure out what to do with my life. Yeah, no big deal.
You're listening to Philosophy Talk. We're thinking about the value of a college education with John Hennessy, who recently stepped down as president of Stanford University.
American colleges and universities come in a vast variety. Small colleges with just a couple hundred students, vast universities with 40,000 students, local junior colleges, large state universities, expensive private universities that do very well with support. There's even a rapidly growing for-profit sector in higher education, including a lot of computer-based universities. How do you find a college or university that's the best fit for you? Well, we've been talking about it, but we're going to talk about it more in the next segment.
We're coming to you from De Anza High School in Richmond, California. We'll take more questions from our college-bound audience of AP students when Philosophy Talk continues.
And I know if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be.
Thanks to our live musical guests, the wonderful finger-snapping Tiffany Austin Trio.
Bravo.
I'm John Perry. This is Philosophy Talk, the program that questions everything.
Ah, with one big exception, your intelligence. I'm Ken Taylor. We're thinking about the value of a college education with a former college president, John Hennessy, former president of Stanford. So, we've got tons of questions from our live audience. You guys can come back up there. Welcome to Philosophy Talk, sir.
Hi, I'm Dilraj Singh. I'm a junior here at De Anza. And my question for Mr. Hennessy is, does the area from which you come from play a factor in how your college application is viewed?
Well, I think most colleges now put a lot of value on having students come from a diverse background. So they'll try to get a mix of students. They'll try and get students who come from an urban background or a more rural background. They'll try to get a real mix. You know, at Stanford, you look at our undergraduate class, it's a mix. It comes from across the entire United States. In fact, it comes from around the world as well. And we think that diversity of student body enhances the learning. As Ken said, you learn so much from your fellow students, and I think that diversity is key to that learning.
And think about why we care about that. John said it enhances their learning, but think about why. Because what we're trying to get you to do is see the world in a multiplicity of ways, through a multiplicity of eyes. We're trying to get you to look at the long historical sweep. We're trying to get you to understand technology, how it affects humans, how people from different walks of life see these things. Right, so we're not just trying to shape you, we're trying to shape the collectivity together.
Yeah.
And we think of that as a service to culture, to civilization, to our nation.
We're also looking for students who are the first in their family to go to a four-year college. I think that's an important role that American education plays. That was actually when Jane Stanford founded the university, that was one of the goals she had. And so today, about 17% of the incoming class is the first member in their family to go to college. So that's important for us.
Welcome to Philosophy Talk, sir.
Good morning. My name is Jason Good, and my question is, does race and gender, like, affect your acceptance into a college?
Race and gender.
Certainly. Well, certainly we're looking, again, that whole issue of diversity. We're really looking for a mix in there. And I think most students today really want to be in a diverse educational environment. They want to be in an environment where there are people from multiple walks of life. So we're looking to compose that in our class.
I've been a little critical of Stanford at times, but I mean, Stanford does very well with this, and it has from day one, at least in comparison to others. Mr. and Mrs. Stanford, who founded the university, wanted women to be part of it from day one. They wanted Asians to be part of it. They wanted African Americans to be part of it, although some of the early administrators were a little reluctant about that. But it's continued to this day. I teach at Berkeley. And at Stanford, Stanford is much more diverse since California passed its anti-affirmative action laws. And when it comes to paying, Stanford does what it conceives as making it possible for you to pay. Now, when they give you the package, you may say, well, your conception of what I can pay and mine, it's a little bit different. But objectively, compared to other universities, it's quite diverse. And frankly, I've lectured at most universities around the country, Princeton, Harvard, Yale. God, what snobby places. I wouldn't go there. Stanford, much different. Great
place.
Well,
people don't realize this. The average amount of financial aid now, the average to somebody on financial aid is over $30,000 a year
at Stanford.
Financial aid at Stanford. Yeah. Over $30,000 a year we're giving in assistance to help.
And let me say about Berkeley, what a great place. The greatest public university in the world, the greatest university system in the world. The atmosphere there is great. I fell in love with it when I first came to California in 1968, and it's great to be there. They don't do nearly as well with counseling students. I was a resident fellow at a dorm at Stanford for 8 years. They don't have anything like that. My daughter went there. She was a senior before she could get into her classes. Used to be you come up to Berkeley, and there in front of Sathergate, there would be radicals and anti-war protesters. Now it's more orthodontists of America or something like that, but it's still a great environment. So you've got some great choices just down the two highways from here.
Welcome to Philosophy Talk, sir.
Good morning. My name is Sam Lee, and I'm a junior. So President Hennessy, earlier you said that we should pursue different classes in the beginning from the freshman year of high school, but we have a system where students need to complete certain classes in order to graduate. And my question is, should we get rid of that system so students can truly explore and find their passions before going to college so that they don't waste time and money in college trying to find that passion?
You You know, it's a balancing act. There are some things you really have to master to be successful in college, right? You've got to master some writing abilities. You've got to master some basic mathematical abilities, some basic science, and some social sciences. I think that ground is there. On the other hand, we ought to allow students to really find something they're excited about. And that, in some sense, college and high school parallel one another. In that in high school, in your junior and senior year, you probably have a little more freedom to take some electives, to pursue something you're really interested in. The same thing happens in college. You're going to find that time in your junior and senior year to say, I'm really interested in philosophy. I'm really interested in psychology. I'm really interested in political science, and really delve and deepen that. And that's the way it should be.
But underneath your question, there's an urgent question, I think. And I think many people in the university world would redo our high school system. Mm. I would completely redo our high school system. Now, nobody's going to let me be the philosopher king and do that. But I think there are many things we could criticize about American high school education. But that's not what we're about here now. Huh? But we could do another show on that. If you have us back, we'll do a show on what's wrong with high school education in America. Okay? Thanks. So we'll go this way and then that way.
Hello, my name is Marlon Gutierrez, and I'm a senior here at De Anza High School. Earlier you mentioned about the difference between going to college for something you're really passionate about and for something that's more fiscally responsible. And I was wondering if it makes more sense to go to college for either a dual major or to go for an undergrad that's more something that you're passionate about and a master's program that you think is more viable in today's industrialized economy.
I think you can certainly do that. I think thinking about that many of you will probably do a bachelor's degree and at some point a master's degree. It may be a business administration degree. It may be you decide to go to law school. There are lots of different possibilities there. You know, rather than dual majors, what I prefer to students to do is a major and then a minor in something else. That provides a little more freedom. It means you're not kind of just piling in courses and trying to squeeze everything in. And it allows a lot of diversity in terms of what students get educated in.
That depends a lot on the major. A STEM major is really demanding these days because, fortunately in one way and unfortunately in another way, knowledge has increased. And the things that you have to know as a young electrical engineer compared to when you went to college, I mean, I think there's just so much more, right?
But we also have a diverse set of majors. I mean, take, for example, there's a major at Stanford called Symbolic Systems
that
mixes philosophy, psychology, and computer science. Most of those people end up going into technical fields later on, but they go in with this broader background than they might have had if they just stayed in a STEM major.
I'm the director of that major. That's the coolest major at Stanford.
Well, wait a minute. And I started it in 1983.
He's one of the founders.
And they didn't even prompt me.
Yes. Welcome to Philosophy Talk.
Hi. My name is Lisa, and I'm actually a mom. So I'm going to speak for some of the parents out there listening. First of all, I wanted to really agree with the idea that in undergraduate, you really need to find where you fit and do what you love and do it. Then you can do well and succeed and go on from there. But I also wanted to address the whole idea of the brass ring. I mean, the brass ring is real. I mean, it is real. I mean, if you look at who was in Obama's team when he first came into office, they were all people out of the Ivy League. If you look at who's on the Supreme Court, if you look at who's in Goldman Sachs, they're all Ivy Leaguers. So I'm wondering how, especially with yourselves, you're out of an elite institution. What's the complicity in this sort of 1% power discrepancy here? And what are you guys trying to do to diffuse that?
You know, I think you've got to look at life trajectories. Take Sandra Day O'Connor, the first woman on the Supreme Court. Grew up in a ranch in rural Arizona, and I mean really rural. Her nearest neighbors were 15 miles away by road, right? Did eventually come to Stanford as an undergraduate, but by that time, she had already built a set of life skills in terms of hard work and endurance and grit to really get through. And she did spectacularly well. So she did use her opportunity to go to school to really advance herself. I think the important thing is to realize that there are good choices for every single student and to find the right choice. The most important thing is not where you get your degree from, it's that you actually get your degree. And that requires finding the right choice for the student.
You know, this is a complicated question. I think I'm not sure if what you said about Obama, not that his entire administration is from Ivy League schools. Maybe a lot of his cabinet officers and all that, and perhaps their graduate degrees and all that. But I think there are many, many paths, many, many paths to success, and many models of success. And I think we have in our culture too few models of success. So, John, you got one last thought for us?
I think my last thought is to remember that in choosing a college, you have to choose the college that's right for you. Go visit places, figure out where you'd like to be, find some schools you're comfortable at, and then certainly put in the stretch school that you might or might not get in. That'll reduce the whole stress in the process, because then you'll know you've got a list of schools where whichever one of them you get into, you'll be happy there and you'll do well there.
So on that wise note, I'm going to thank you for joining us. It's been a really great conversation.
My pleasure, Ken.
Our guest has been former president of Stanford, John Hennessy. He's our 10th president. He was our 10th president. He's a very influential computer science researcher. This conversation continues at Philosopher's Corner at our online community of thinkers, where our motto is, now get this, cogito ergo blogo, I think, therefore I blog. You too can become a partner in that community and gain access to the entire archive of Philosophy Talk, over 400 episodes, just by visiting our website, philosophytalk.org.
Now, here's a guy who knows the value of talking fast. I don't know whether he learned it in college or as an AP student in South Dakota, but he can really talk fast. It's Ian Scholes, the 60-second philosopher.
Ian Scholes, in preparing for this program, I did a little research into the school. Some people who went to school here include John Kiffmeyer, the first drummer for Green Day, who even called himself Al Sobrante, Mark Biederman from Blind Illusion, a progressive thrash band, or so Wikipedia tells me, which also featured bass player Les Claypool, now with Primus, also a student here. As was Kirk Hammett, a horror movie fan and lead guitar man for Metallica. So one might conclude that you don't need to go to college. Just learn how to play a bass and wait for the record deal. No, sorry, times have changed. If you want a label deal, you have to make the label yourself. And what are the perks of being a rock star? You can't trash a hotel room anymore. You would get chided on Twitter so bad. You could maybe trash an Airbnb, but that would just make the old hippie that owns the place feel bad. On the bright side, now you save money on record packaging because there are no records. But modern listeners, many of them, download the music for free, and the music that is paid for, well, that money still winds up in the pockets of the record companies, streaming companies today, I guess. Musicians are supposed to quit whining and man or woman up. If they want to make money, they have to tour 300 days out of the year and sell T-shirts and coffee mugs. Get used to it. This means warehouses, spreadsheets, those dongles that fit on your smartphone that let you process credit cards. Did Kirk Hammett ever process a credit card? Does he ever sell his own T-shirts? So you need a college education just to be a rock superstar these days and be your own manager and roadie. The other thing to remember, all bands and all tech businesses used to begin in garages, all of them. That was okay in California with no winter and you could just park your car on the street, leaving the garage free. That may still be true, but the garages have been out of commission for years. Where do you think the Kirk Hammetts and Claypools got their start? In their parents' garages. And besides the amps, drum kits, and guitars they left behind, they're probably full of the computers left over from the failed startups of the 1980s, the Amigas, Tandys, Commodores. And maybe you have a broke-down Roland TB-303 gathering duster in there. Well, that synthesizer started out as a way to keep a bass line going so guitarists could practice by themselves. That didn't work out as a marketing ploy, but the TB-303 got a second life when electronic musicians used it to develop the house music genre and acid house beyond that. You don't need a garage for any of that. You just need a laptop and a prayer. So it doesn't matter. And your cars are being used as Ubers anyway, so they're renting out the garage and your bedroom. It's called the sharing economy, and we're lucky to have it. So why not college? Here's the deal. Not many people are going to have jobs in the future, which means lots of rent parties, which means lots of work for DJs. That could be you. But that means knowing your music, and that means database wrangling. You got to know soul versus rhythm and blues versus neo-soul versus retro-soul. You got to know the difference between golden oldies and death metal, acid house versus hip-hop versus trip-hop, progressive thrash versus punk rock versus heavy metal versus ghetto house versus deep house versus acid house versus big beat techno-trance and ballroom dancing. How to archive them? How to keep them straight? Now, the Swedish botanist Linnaeus invented a way to classify plants and birds. It's called taxonomy. Getting a handle in binomial nomenclature could put you one step above the other turntablers out there. Give you an edge in the doggy-dog DJ world, you need to learn Linnaean taxonomy. So college is the place to go. Why not? What have they got to lose? After all, thanks to Bernie Sanders, college is free. Oh, wait, never mind. I got to go.
Philosophy Talk is a presentation of Ben Manila Productions and the trustees of Leland. Stanford Junior University. Copyright 2016.
Our executive producer is David Demarest. Special thanks to West Contra Costa Unified School District Superintendent Matthew Duffy and Executive Director Anna Shen, De Anza High School Principal Summerlin Sigler, and English Department Chair Elizabeth Sanders.
Thanks also to Orgazal, Dan Brandon, Crystal Nickerson, and to our musical guests, Tammy Hall on piano, Anissa Strings on bass, and Tiffany Austin on vocals.
The program is produced by Devin Strolovich. Laura McGuire is our Director of Research. Our Marketing Director is Dave McAllister.
Support for Philosophy Talk comes from various groups at Stanford University and the partners of our online community of thinkers.
And also from the members of KALW, Local Public Radio, San Francisco, where our program originates.
The views expressed or misexpressed on this program do not necessarily represent the opinions of Stanford University or of our other funders.
Not even when they're true and reasonable. The conversation continues on our website, philosophytalk.org, where you too can become a partner in our community of thinkers.
I'm John Perry.
And I'm Ken Taylor. Thank you for listening.
And thank you for thinking. Thank you.